All right, let's begin. We are...
Is there a source sheet?
There was one. It's the same one. I don't know if you've had it yet, but it's the same one that we've had before. All right. We've been looking, sort of review, looking at this parakhaf. I think we read it through once or twice, kind of looking at the whole story of the meeting between David and Yonatan, their last meeting, conversation about Shaul and about his intentions and about his mindset. All of... I think we went through the Radak. I think we went through the Radak, who looked at the question of what's motivating. Right, did we talk about the Radak? What's motivating David, Yonatan, to suggest that Shaul is really okay? That it's just this Ruach Ra'ah that's trying to misdirect him, and that he can protect him. What I want to do over the next couple of sessions, today and our next class, which, as I said, will not be next week, 2 weeks after, it will be, but 2 weeks from now, is begin to look at the dynamic of the relationship between David and Yonatan in a much closer, with a much closer eye, magnifying glass. Specifically, as we read through the conversation between them, read between the lines, what is the nature of the relationship? What is the context in which David and Yonatan are having this conversation? And that's the bigger issue here, because I think at the end of class last week, was it, that we talked about the fact that there was this almost tragic expectation that David... We have class, right?
We have
class. There was almost this tragic expectation from David's perspective that Yonatan would come with David and that they would escape together, and that that would have given some kind of legitimization to David in his flight. So there is, in the end, this parak ends with a very moving meeting between them, and a very, you know, they're both crying and parting ways, etc. But it's somewhat, but it's a sad confrontation. It's a sad meeting. It's a sad conversation between them, because there's so much that's expectation from David's perspective that ultimately this is the beginning of a period of time that's probably the most difficult time in David's life, at least until the very end, the last years of his life. So what I want to do...
We never did talk about, like, the whole thing with if they're going to meet up after the whole sign with the...
Correct. Yeah, we're not going to get to the very end of the prayer.
Just wanted to point that out.
Yes. Well, that's our last piece. That's our last piece of this parak, and we will get to that, today. So I want to go back again. We've done this a number of times. I want to reread the conversation between them. Part of that is, if you haven't figured out the method to my madness, is that the more times we read it, the more times we know it and process it. So we're going to reread this conversation again. Remember, we've divided this parak up into two parts, almost neatly, the two halves, the conversation between David and Yonatan, the plan, if you will, and the implementation that actually takes place. And those two halves of the parak, almost in half, divide this parak evenly. So we're on the first half of this conversation between David and Yonatan, and the plan, as it were, as they lay it out. And then we will explore the implementation, Bezrat Hashem, in 2 weeks, to remind everybody we're not having class next week. Okay? Excellent. Let's jump in. Vayivrach David minayot berama, beginning of chapter 20.
Some of us who have no idea.
350.
One page. Just put a sticky in there.
Verse 20.
I already had it.
Just put a sticky in there. We're not going anywhere. On the same page for a long time. Vayivrach David minayot berama. David comes and he speaks before Yonatan. What did I do So you hear the pain in David's voice. What have I done? What's my sin? What's my iniquity? That your father, right? Lifnei Avicha, seeks to kill me. Kimvakeshet nafshi. And you almost get the impression that he's not informing Yonatan that his father is trying to kill him. He's trying to seek an understanding as to why. He doesn't come back to him and he says, hey, remember that promise your father made to you that he would be okay with me? He's gone back on it. He's not trying to inform Yonatan. I think he's taken it as a given that Yonatan is aware, that Yonatan knows what's going on. He may not be a partner to it, but he's certainly aware of it. He's the son of the king. How could he not be aware of it? And so he runs to Yonatan with a kind of a pouring out of his heart. Ma chatati, ma avoni, ma asiti, ki mevakeshet nafshi. What did I do that he's trying to kill me? And here, Yonatan, given the fact that Yonatan has last engagement Yonatan had in the story was back in chapter 19 when Shaul had assured him and promised him that everything would be fine, he responds with the basis of information that he has. Vayomer lo, Chalila. Chalila, I think we mentioned the fact that Chalila is the language of an oath. In modern Hebrew, it's a Yiddishism that comes from, it's an idiom that comes from Yiddish. Chas v'chalila, chas v'shalom. It's used as a kind of a God forbid type of expression, but really it's a language of an oath. And you'll see back and forth why that's important is because we can actually trace the number of times an expression of oath, shavua or brit, is used in this conversation. Each one of them, David and Yonatan, back and forth, kind of trace it in your mind as we go through it. I'm not going to bother with the board. How many times some expression of oath is employed in this conversation? Vayomalo, chalila, lo tamut, I swear to you, you will not die. Hine lo yaaseh avi davar gadol o davar katon v'lo yigle et ozni. Madu yastir avi mimeni et hadavar hazeh? Ein zot, this can't be. My father would never try to do this without telling me, and he hasn't said a word to me since chapter 19. He said, clearly, you must be mistaken. This cannot be. I would know about it if that was his intent. And there's that naivete, a little bit, of Yonatan. Pasuk Gimel. Vayishava od David. So David swears to him, I swear to you. Now, there's that back and forth. Yonatan says, Chalila. David says, Ani nishba. Vayishava David. So you get the sense that there is if you need to employ an oath to strengthen your, you know, like two kids are playing and they don't believe in it and say, I swear to you, right? Mm-hmm. If you need to employ an oath, what does that reflect? If not maybe a little bit of
distrust?
Yeah, doubt. A little bit of doubt that you're not mm-hmm. getting through, that the other side isn't quite willing to take you at face value. Mm-hmm. You need to strengthen your position with the status of with the strength of an oath, as if to say, I swear to you on, right? Mm-hmm. As if that's going to make a difference. So this is part of that dynamic that's taking place. Vayishava od David. Now, as to the question as to why Shaul would do this without telling Yonatan, so David has a very reasonable explanation. Vayomer yado yada avicha ki matzati chen be'enecha. Takes an oath and he says, Your father knows how close we are. It's our relationship that's the cause of the problem here. Your father knows how close we are, and because of that, he's decided, especially after the last time he tried to take you into confidence, you sided with me. Back in chapter 19, maybe your father learned the lesson and it's not going to bother him anymore. Or maybe he's concerned for your emotional well-being. Doesn't want to make you upset. Doesn't want to upset you. Penye atzev. doesn't want to upset you, which is an ironic statement, because in the end, after Shaul confronts, or Yonatan confronts Shaul, and then Shaul tries to kill Yonatan, and after Yonatan gets up from the table in anger and frustration and refuses to eat anymore, the expression that the Navi uses in Pasuk Lamed Daled, the very end of the story, there's two ironies between the beginning conversation and the end. This is the second one. Pen Yatzev, Pasuk Lamed Daled, Vayakum Yonatan Meim Ashulchan B'choreyaf. Yonatan got up from the table in a huff. V'lo achal b'yom achodesh hasheni lechem. He didn't eat that second Rosh Chodesh day. Ki ne'etzav el David. Ki yichlamo aviv. He was upset. He was sad for David. His father decided that, you know, he sort of had closed the door on him. So you, in the one hand, here's David defending or explaining to Yonatan why his father hasn't confided in him. He doesn't want to upset you. And in the end, what does his father do?
Upset.
But the language here is the same word. Pen Yatzev, ki ne'etzav el David. So there's a link between these two halves of the story, and that there's a number of lines being drawn between them. V'olam chay Hashem b'chei nafshecha, back to Pasuk Gimel. Chay Hashem b'chei nafshecha, it's also a language of an oath. Right, Chai Hashem, God's life, v'chei nafshecha, on your life. This is when I swear to you doesn't work. So where do you go? To I swear to you on your life. And God, I swear to by God. I swear to God. We all heard that expression, right? Okay, on your soul and God's life. In other words, he's trying to get through to him, and it's not working. So you up the ante. I swear to you, Vayishava, Chay Hashem Chay Nafshecha, I swear to you on your life, on God's life, we just keep upping the ante. Kifesa beniyu ben amavet. There's a hair's breadth. It was a hair's breadth between me and death. And that was twice. That hair's breadth is a reference to two occasions. Right? The most explicit is the Chanit that missed him by a hair's breadth. And I suspect he didn't escape with much more than a hair's breadth in Beit Shmuel either. Right? Shmuel caught Shaul at the moment, but he, in order to enable David to run. So I suspect that there's an element there too.
I don't think there's anywhere in the Torah where there's so much swearing going on.
It's a very unique parak. There's
swearing.
A lot of swearing. They're
swear
back and forth.
Swear that, swear
right?
that.
And considering the fact that the Torah doesn't want us to take oaths, right? The Torah is very, very harsh on oaths. Oath is a very limited use. This parak, I think the number of times that it does reflect the use of the expression related to oath, whether it be shvuah, whether it be chay Hashem, chay nafshecha, chalila, these are all expressions of oath, I think only reflects the growing tension between David and Yonatan. And that's part of the dynamic of this parak. It brings them together, but at the same time, we're beginning to see the crack that's dividing them apart.
Do you feel that Yonatan cares a bit more than David in this relationship?
No, on the contrary.
I think it's the other way around.
I think it's the other way around. But we have to get to the end of the parak for me to prove that thesis. Vayomer Yonatan al David, Ma tamar nafshecha ve'eselach. So at this point, Yonatan says to David, okay, my friend, what is it that you want me to do? Ma tamar nafshecha ve'eselach. So tell me what you want me to do. I don't think it's in a tone of frustration, but it could be, right? Okay, David, so what do you really want? But I think it's more sincere than that. Tell me. And here for the first time, it is David who introduces the suggestion or the plan. And this plan is going to change, is going to morph. So if you watch it carefully, David presents a plan of action around the Rosh Chodesh feast. Yonatan will modify the plan of action around the Rosh Chodesh feast, and then when we move to the implementation of it, it gets morphed and modified again. So I've got to sort of watch this plan as it changes through the course of the parak. Vayomer David al Yonatan, Hinei Chodesh Machar. Tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. Big surprise, right? Tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. This is the parak that we read as the Haftarah of Machar Chodesh. Tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh, and therefore, Va'anochi Yoshev Eshev Im HaMelech Le'achol. There is an expectation that I will be sitting next to the king to eat, because the king has a feast on Rosh Chodesh. Everybody is there. It's a big state dinner. My absence will be conspicuous. So let's use this feast tomorrow as a kind of test and see what your father's reaction is. V'shilachtani v'nistarti basadeh. I'm going to go and hide in the field. Send me into the field. Let me go. I'm not going to be at the feast. You're going to allow me to be absolved of that responsibility. Ad ha'erev ha'shlishit. Now, ad ha'erev ha'shlishit, hear your translations. I'm going to argue with your translations. What's new?
Until
Third day at evening. That assumes that he knows it's a two-day Rosh Chodesh. I do not believe he knows it's a two-day Rosh Chodesh. Remember, Rosh Chodesh is a dynamic process in the time of Tanakh, declared day by day. If the witnesses come, then you had one day Rosh Chodesh. If the witnesses don't come, you end up with 2 days Rosh Chodesh. Whether it's 1 day Rosh Chodesh or 2 days Rosh Chodesh is always a dynamic process of the declaration of the Beit Din. It's almost impossible. It's very rare that you'd ever know in advance whether or not the expectation is a one-day or two-day Rosh Chodesh, because that would require a fixed calendar. They didn't have a fixed calendar. They had a dynamic calendar. So when David doesn't say, tomorrow and the day after are 2 days Rosh Chodesh. He says, Hinei Chodesh Machar. Tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. Which means there's only 1 day Rosh Chodesh expectation. That's going to be very important for us at the end of the story. So I'm going to make the assumption that there is only 1 day Rosh Chodesh, Hinei Chodesh Machar. So what does Erev HaShlishit mean?
That he's been going to be gone for a while.
No.
No.
No, on the contrary. Yeah. He's talking about hiding in the field until after this feast, so Yonatan can come and tell him what happened at this feast. So if they're on a Sunday, and Monday is Rosh Chodesh, when is David expecting him and Yonatan to get together?
Wednesday.
No.
Tuesday.
No.
Thursday.
Monday night.
Because it's the next day.
Sunday. They're talking Sunday, right? Yeah. Having a conversation. That's day one.
Monday.
Day two is Machar. Tomorrow night is Erev HaShlishit.
Monday night is like Tuesday.
Right. Yeah. David's not waiting 3 days. He's waiting until the night after the second, the Machar, which is Motzei Rosh Chodesh, which is the night before the third day, right? Erev HaShlishit. Not the night after the third day, but the night before the third day. Exactly right. To David's mind, it's crazy to sit in the field and wait for 3 days. That's not so. It's nothing to eat. I mean, he's going to starve for 3 days? That's nuts. That's crazy. And that was never the expectation. The expectation was, tomorrow, Rosh Chodesh, we'll go out into the field. You go to the meal. I'm going to go out into the field tomorrow night. After the feast, you'll come to me and you'll tell me what's going on.
So tomorrow night was Monday night?
Whatever day of the week it is.
But if they're on Sunday,
tomorrow night's Monday night. It's 1 day Rosh Chodesh. Hinei Chodesh Machar.
But this is not really wrong when you say until the third day at evening. It is the third day, but it's Monday night.
All the translations are working off the assumption that they're talking about
day.
A plan of a two-day Rosh Chodesh. I don't believe that was ever the plan of a two-day Rosh Chodesh.
Yeah, because this says in parentheses, in brackets of the month, third day of the month.
Well, that's a
right,
thing.
Which would make no sense.
But that's different than this.
And the third day of the month would not work in any case, because that would assume that the first day is Rosh Chodesh. It's the first day of the month, and the second day of Rosh Chodesh is the second day of the month. But that's not how 2 days of Rosh Chodesh
right.
work.
It's the last.
In a 2 day of Rosh Chodesh, the first day is the last day of the previous month.
Right.
And the second day of Rosh Chodesh is the first day of the
correct.
Second month. So the third day of the month
correct.
Doesn't make any sense in that
correct.
Regard. I'm going to leave this, we're going to take this assumption that Erev HaShlishit means if today they're having this conversation, tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh, and tomorrow night we are having a conversation in the field.
Right. They'd have taken food anyhow.
They did not take food, and I'll prove to you that they did not take food. And the fact that there is a Tu Rosh Chodesh becomes a very significant factor in the story. But I'm jumping, I'm laying the pieces for what's going to come next. So we're just going to make that assumption and go from there. Right. No sandwiches. Yes.
Today Rosh Chodesh is the last day of the previous month?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You
You'll have to come to my calendar course. Uh-huh. I'm going to redo the calendar course probably January, beginning of January to mid-February on a Tuesday night. We're going to redo that 6-week calendar course. I haven't done that in many, many years.
Yes.
Analysis of the Hebrew calendar.
It's coming.
Everybody, how do we decide? Does every part of the population celebrate one day?
It's declared by the Beit Din, so yeah. It's one universal process by which the Beit Din makes that declaration.
And then when does part of the population celebrate the 2 days?
What?
I don't know what you're talking about.
The 2 days of
Rosh Chodesh? If Beit Din does not declare that day Rosh Chodesh.
I mean, but they didn't have telephones. I mean,
no, but they had ways of communicating. That's the whole story of the fire and the
right
smoke signals. They had ways of communicating, especially because everybody's in Israel. Right? It's not that they're so far away. It's Rosh Chodesh. If the Beit Din declares it, so then it becomes Rosh Chodesh. If Beit Din doesn't declare it, the next day is Rosh Chodesh. And your Chagim shift by a day, and hence the whole story about Chutz La'aretz having 2 days of Yantif, right? They're all interconnected. But certainly in the time of Tanakh, they're working off a process by which Rosh Chodesh is declared via Eidim, via witnesses coming to the Beit Din. They don't know in advance whether it's 1 day or 2 days. I'm willing to stake my interpretation on it. All right. Not my reputation, but my interpretation. All right. Pasuk Hey. Vayomer David al Yonatan, Inei chodesh machar, v'anochi yoshev v'shev im ha'melech le'achol, v'shilachtani v'nistati b'sadeh ad ha'erev ha'shlishit. Im pakod yifkedeni avicha. What will happen when I don't show up to the feast? So that's your litmus test. If your father, and he will, im pakod yifkedeni avicha. It's not so much if, but when. And your father looks around and sees who's there and who's not there, and he's going to notice that I'm missing. V'amarta, this is what you're going to say to him. You're going to respond when he says, "Hey, where's David?" You're going to say, "Nishon nisham imeni David larutz bet lechem irok hizevach hayamim sham l'chol ha'mishpacha." David asked permission, right, from Yonatan, who's the crown prince, and asked permission to go to Bet Lechem to spend Rosh Chodesh with his family, Thanksgiving feast. And watch the reaction, says David. Watch the reaction. Im ko yomar tov shalom l'avdecha. If he says, "Oh, that's very nice. What a wonderful thing. David wants to spend the Yantif, Thanksgiving, Rosh Chodesh with his family. How beautiful, how heartwarming. Shalom l'avdecha. Everything's great. Peace unto you. Shalom Yisrael. We're good." If. But if he gets angry, which is what David, I suspect, thinks is going to happen, then you will know that he really wants to kill me, and you will know that I'm right. Now, two possibilities, right? Possibility A, that he responds and says, everything's great. Possibility B, is that he's going to be angry and you're going to know it. And therefore, his next step, which is a takeaway, V'yasita chesed al avdecha, be kind, do kindness to me, to your servant. Ki bivrit Hashem eveta et avdecha imach. We made a brit between us. We entered into a covenant. We had an agreement. We had a brit. We're brothers in arms. We have a brit between us.
When was that?
This is... We don't necessarily know the details of it, but it's a brit means a relationship. It means they're friends, they're partners. This is a.
No, I was just wondering if there's anywhere in the text where you see them, you know.
No, but it's the whole relationship.
Blood brothers, whatever.
Yeah. The im yesh bi avon hamiteni ata yad vichalam zetvieni. here David says something astounding. He says, I'm guilty. You kill me. Don't hand me over to your father. Which is astounding. Because here we're talking about David and Yonatan, talking about the brit between them, talking about how much they care for each other, talking about how he's assuming that he's trying to convince him to come with him. And here at the end of his speech, he says to him, do me a favor. If your father really wants to kill me, don't hand me over to him. It's an astounding accusation. Right? An astounding accusation. Why would David have even a hint, have him enough entertain the possibility that Yonatan would hand David over to Shaul, let alone not go with him, but hand him over to Shaul? But in a certain sense, David knows Shaul better than Yonatan does, because at the end of the feast, what request does Shaul make of Yonatan?
To bring him to
do exactly that. And that's the other link between these two conversations. That is in Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Kol yamim asher ben Yishai chay al adama lo tikon ata umalchotecha. As long as ben Yishai lives, your kingdom shall not. Ata, says Shaul to Yonatan, shlach lekachato elai ki ben mavetu. Go bring him to me to be put to death. So there's the irony, that David says to Yonatan exactly what Shaul will eventually say to him, which is, you bring me David yourself. And here he says to Yonatan, whatever you do, if you discover that I am in fact, that he's in fact trying to kill me, it puts you in a terrible position. Because now you are, as the son of the king, crown prince, obliged, obligated to obey his command, which will certainly be to go and find me and bring me to him. Do me a favor, kill me yourself. Don't do that. Don't hand me over to him.
Isn't it kind of ironic that David knows Shaul better than his own son?
It's also not uncommon. Right. But again, because David has been at the receiving end of Shaul's wrath so much, Yonatan's been living in this naive little bubble, right? David is more aware of it.
Why would David even say that there are two possibilities? I mean, he knows that the king...
Well, he's in a sense, he's appeasing Yonatan. Right? I mean, Yonatan says, it's not true.
The sentence is just...
It's a way of saying, if you're right, fine, but...
If not.
Okay. And the but is, to David, the more realistic option here.
Yeah,
right?
Because he certainly doesn't believe the first
part
of the sentence.
Correct. And he doesn't even finish the phrase. Part of the, if, I don't know if you pick it up in the translation, but in the Hebrew, all of these phrases in the Hebrew, the grammar is very broken up. You have phrases in this conversation where there's no syntax, there's no full phrases, there's no subject, predicate, verb, context. It's all half phrases that don't. Im tov shalom lav, im yomar tov shalom lavdecha. If he says good peace unto your servant, but if not, so what happened to the conclusion of the if?
He certainly knows that the first
right?
part.
So he jumps right into. But if not, there's half phrases in this conversation, and we'll see that all the way through. Not atypical of two people having a conversation that's filled with emotion.
Does David think that it's possible there's something that he did wrong when it's saying im yesh bi avon?
That is a classic ploy of he says. Well, how does he start? Me'avoni mechatati lifnei avicha ki mevakeshet nafshi. It's called a rhetorical question,
mm-hmm.
Right? Comes to him and he says, "What did I'm totally innocent here. What did I do wrong?" And suddenly he turned on me. I've been loyal to him. I've put my life on the line for him. I fought his battles. I fought his wars for him. It's like Lavan and Yaakov. When Yaakov confronts Lavan, he says, "You changed the terms of our agreement 10 times. What did I do wrong?" So that's not a question with that expects an answer.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lavan gives him one anyway.
He Excuse me?
But Lavan gives him one anyway.
But in David's case, that's not.
Yeah.
All right. That's part one of the story. Part two. Vayomer Yonatan. Now the conversation shifts. And part of our task now is to look at these two halves of the conversation and compare them. Vayomer Yonatan. Chalilalach. Says Yonatan to David for the second time. Chalilalach. I swear to you, it's an oath. Kim yadoa eida ki chalta hara'a me'im avi lavoi lecha velo ota agidlach. If I know my father wants to kill you, do you think I would come to you and not tell you? Now that question itself is astounding. It's also rhetorical. Right? Another way of saying, I assure you, I swear to you, if my father really wants to kill you, I will tell you. Why does he have to swear to him that he'll tell him if he, his father wants to kill him?
So he's believed.
He doesn't have to convince David that Shaul wants to kill him. Why does Yonatan have to swear to David that if his father wants to kill David, he will come and tell him? What's the alternative?
That he doesn't
come and kill him.
That he's coming to hand him over to Shaul, right? So is a way of swearing my loyalty is to you, not to my father. You don't have to worry about the fact that you think I'm going to hand you over to my father. That accusation stings. That accusation hurts. So he responds with an oath. Chas v'shalom, how could you accuse me of such a thing? If my father really wants to kill you, you don't think I'm going to tell you? And in the back of David's mind, he's not sure. This is the tragedy. The crack between them is growing. And he says to him, If I know my father wants to kill you, of course I'm going to come and tell you. Now, I don't think David wanted Yonatan to come and tell him if his father wants to kill him. What did David want?
Wanted Yonatan to go with him.
To go with him. And that's where the conversation begins to change. David's expectation from the return to the palace to engage with Yonatan was not to get Yonatan to see that his father wants to kill him. He didn't need to come back to the palace and risk his life to convince Yonatan that his father wants to kill him. He figured that out eventually. He needed to come back to the palace and risk his life and then engage with Yonatan because he wanted to bring Yonatan with him. And so when he pushes Yonatan finally to recognize that if his father's going to try, really has changed, then you, Yonatan, have to make a decision. Whose side are you on? Says Yonatan, I'll make that decision. If I know my father wants to kill you, I will come and I will let you know. And I can only imagine what David's right now thinking. That wasn't what I asked for. Mm-hmm. But that's where Yonatan's beginning to draw the line.
Did he actually ask him to do that?
No. It's only implied.
He wanted it.
That's what I suspect you want. And mm-hmm. The proof to that comes at the end of the parak. Mm-hmm. So I'm as I said, I'm laying pieces of the puzzle.
At the end of the parak.
That's right. I'm laying the pieces of the puzzle. The pieces of the puzzle all come together at the very end of the parak, but we've got to get there. So we'll see. That's how I keep my audience. Vayomer David el Yonatan. Says David to Yonatan again. Right? So what did Yonatan offer? Yonatan offered to come and tell him if his father wants to kill him.
Which
A, he already knows, and B, David also knows that's an absurdity. Think about it for a moment. If Shaul really wants to kill him, you think, and it's now become public, you think Yonatan is going to risk a public meeting with David in the palace? The crown prince who's been sent on a mission to kill David is going to schedule a meeting with David in his palace, in his office, to tell him, my father wants to kill you? So David's response to Yonatan's offer, which is a sincere offer, but it's an absurd one, is to say, Mi agidli, o maya ancha avicha kasha. Explain this to me. Who's going to come and tell me? What do you think you're dealing with here? Who is going to tell me if your father wants to kill me? You? Who are you going to send to let me know? So what was David originally thinking? He was hiding in the field, expecting Yonatan to come running out to him if his father wants to kill him. What was David originally expecting? I think he was expecting Yonatan to come running out to him and say, okay, let's go. Pack my bag and let's go. But that doesn't happen. So here Yonatan has to devise a plan. Somehow he's got to be able to convey to David a message. Okay? Vayomer Yonatan al David, lecha v'netze asadeh. And here, one of those mystery questions which we raised when we read this the first time, hopefully, time permitting, we're going to answer today. Why does he make the offer? Why does he first interject a statement that it's time to go outside? Which means that up until this point, and the courtyard of the palace doesn't have ears.
Well, I don't know where they went.
Okay. So, they go for a walk. They go for a spazier. Have a nitzia sadeh.
Well, how do you know where they were from the beginning of the conversation?
Well, if they're going outside now, I assume they were inside before. I can only make that assumption. I actually have a stronger proof to why I think they were in the palace, but I'm going to come to that. I'll answer today. That'll answer today. But for now, I'll leave it at the assumption if they're going outside, then beforehand they were inside.
It says v'yetzu, then they have to be going out.
Right, so the question is, where were they when they were inside? Were they in some secret hiding place, or were they in some more public place? I will answer that question, b'zrat Hashem, today. V'yomer Yonatan el David. Who drove the first conversation? Who was the driving energy behind the conversation in the palace?
David.
Yonatan was responding, David was driving the conversation. These next two paragraphs are driven by Yonatan. Vayomer Yonatan al David, Hashem Elokei Yisrael, which is another expression of
swearing,
an oath. Ki echkor et avi, I will investigate my father. Ka'et machar ashlishit, today, tomorrow, the third day, meaning by tomorrow night. V'inei tov el David, and it will be good for David. V'loaz eshlach elecha v'galiti et osnecha. And when I discovered that my father really is all fine and loves you and he's your son-in-law, you're his son-in-law and everything is great, I will come and tell you. Galiti et oznecha. You want to know if I can come and meet you? If everything's good, I'll come and I'll greet you. Koyase Hashem Leonatan v'choyasif ki yetiv el avi al ta'a lecha. But I swear to you, koyase Hashem Leonatan v'choyasif. Again, I swear to you. If in fact my father has evil intent against you, I will too come and tell you. Or I will inform you. Reveal to your ear. I will send you on your way and let you go in peace.
How could he possibly go in peace?
Meaning, he's going to allow him to escape. He's not going to hand him over to his father. He's going to enable him to escape. And may God be with you the way he was with my father. And in that sentence, he tells him exactly what his intention is. His intention is to come and tell him, to inform him, to let him know that his father's, if his father really wants to kill him, and not necessarily to come with him. And that's part of the tragedy. V'loi madeni chai. Another expression of an oath. We can map out how many expressions of an oath we have in this paragraph. Deal kindly with me. Don't kill me. Now, who's accusing whom of trying to kill whom? Right?
Yonatan
says to everyone, when you go, know that you are going to eventually, I know, says Yonatan, that you are going to reach a position of power, that you are going to become the king. Says it explicitly a parak from now. I know that that's where it's all destined to be. And when that happens, do me a favor. Don't kill me and my household. Remember that I enabled you to escape. keep your chesed, your kindness, your commitment, the brit that we have between you and me and our household for eternity. When God enables you to destroy all of your enemies from upon this earth, don't include me in them. And Shaul certainly would be included in them. Yonatan ben Shaul should be included in that moment. It was not uncommon for kings when they ascended to a throne to remove all of the dynasty descendants of the previous lineage. So Yonatan says, I'm enabling you to escape. When we end up in this situation, remember that I enabled you to escape. There's a breach between us. Spare my life. Again, the grammar here is in the Hebrew is cut and short and it's lacking syntax, but the gist of it is, makes a brit with him. And he says, when God will allow you to destroy your enemies, don't include me amongst them. Yosef Yonatan lashmia et David. He makes David take an oath that this will be the case. Pa'avatoto, because of their love for each other. Ki avat nafsho aevo. So in all of this paragraph, who's speaking?
Yonatan.
And who is he asking to enter into a brit with him?
David.
And who is he asking to spare his life?
David.
In the previous paragraph, who was speaking?
David.
Who is he entering into a brit with? Who is he asking to enter into a brit with him? Yonatan. Who is he asking to spare his life?
Yonatan.
See the table turn?
Yes.
And the oaths constantly in this conversation. Okay, but we need a plan. I can't just come out and meet you and say to you, hey, your father wants to kill you, so we need a plan. And this is where the Haftorah begins. The problem with Haftorahs is that we start in all the wrong places. Right? This is where the Haftorah begins. Vayomer lo Yonatan. Machar Chodesh. Again, tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. Exactly as David, he borrows David's plan. David's plan was, tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh, you'll see that your father wants to kill me, you'll come out to me and you'll tell me, or we'll run. So he devises a plan. You will be counted and you'll be missing in this feast. You're going to go sit here in the field for today, tomorrow, till tomorrow night. Going to go hide there in the same place that you hid the other day when we were having this conversation with my father, Perikutet. Some stone. Vani, what's going to happen? Now, again, what's the problem? Shaul has to be able to communicate.
You mean Yonatan?
So Yonatan has to be able to communicate Shaul's intentions to David without meeting him. Mm-hmm. Without meeting him. Because once those intentions are public,
he's in trouble.
Then he can't meet with David anymore. Not unless he's planning to.
Either bring him back or run away.
Either kill him or run away with him, which is what David's original understanding was.
Why couldn't he just go tell him, yeah, you better get out of here?
Because he's a state criminal. The prince of the kingdom is going to go meet with a state criminal.
Well,
Shaul has decreed publicly that the man has a death sentence on him. Yonatan is going to go and meet publicly with somebody who he'll be accused of treason. And his father is not... His father.
Have to know that he went and told David.
Where are they going to meet? You're in the palace. You're in the courtyard of the palace. Every officer in the palace is a spy to the king. It's not possible. Right now they're in the Rose Garden.
Outside.
They're in the Rose Garden.
But the conversation
is taking place in the Rose Garden.
And then they're going out to the field from the Rose Garden.
The field is the Rose Garden.
No. All right. So where did they come out from?
Palace.
So how come he was at the palace then?
Oh, because that's before Yonatan was. Oh. Yeah, that's when came to Yonatan to say, "Let's go." Okay, Yonatan, let's get out of here.
And his reason for warning Yonatan to go with him? Was that to give more credibility that he was not?
If Yonatan had gone with him, the story would have been a very different story. The story would have lasted one chapter, maybe two, and that would have been the end of it. First of all, Yonatan is the popular one. He's got the popular. The last time Shaul accused Yonatan of treason, which was back in chapter 14, the Battle of Michmas, the people sided with Yonatan and protected him. Mm-hmm. Shaul is not afraid to accuse his son of treason, and Yonatan demonstrates. So there, and that part of the tension and the dynamic between them as well. But there is. But that's what I suspect David wanted. David wanted Yonatan to come and give him legitimacy and mm-hmm. support his case and demonstrate that he was blameless. Mm-hmm. And Yonatan says, "You are blameless, go on your way, and we'll meet maybe never." Right? From their perspective, this is the last time they're going to ever meet. They will have one more meeting, but they don't know that yet. In the meantime, back to our plan. Va'ani, Pasuk Chaf, Va'ani, Shloshet Achitzim Tzida Ore. I'm going to shoot three arrows. L'shalach li l'matara. We're going to go out to target practice, right? Out in the field with a target, with the shooting ranges. That's where you're hiding. That's where we're going to go out. There's a target over there. That's where I do my practicing. I'm going to go and shoot three arrows towards the target. And in so doing, the crown prince would not go outside alone. It's not possible. He would have his armor bearer with him, his caddy, his assistant, his na'a, right? He would always have somebody with him. That's part of the problem, is Yonatan can never be alone. V'hine eshlach et na'a. I'm going to send this na'a, and I'm going to say to him, lech metzat achitzim. And here's the code. If I say to the lad, the arrow lies from you hither, meaning?
Close.
Very close. What's the code? Kachenu vavo, ki shalom lecha, ve'en davar chai Hashem. Come, take them, come home. It'll be peace for you. Nothing happening. Chai Hashem, I take an oath on God's life, right? For another umpteenth time. Meaning, if I say to him that arrow lies between you, the Na'ar, and the palace, hither, what am I saying to you, David?
Come on.
Then that you can also come hither. But if I say to the Na'ar, the arrow lies yonder, then what am I saying? That you should go yonder. Then Hashem is sending you on a mission. This remains a secret between us forever.
Yonatan.
Yonatan's shooting it. Yonatan's practice. Arrow practice. Shooting range. The Na'ar is going out to get them. And in so doing, he's able to announce publicly a code that only David will know. Understanding what the assumption is, that this is the way in which Yonatan has answered David's question. If your father wants to kill me, how are you going to come and tell me? He says, we're going to use a code that we're going to establish a target practice. That code will tell you whether to come home or whether to run. Because you and I are never going to be able to meet. And if my father wants to kill you, we're certainly not going to be able to meet. And even if he doesn't, even if my father's response is peaceful, clearly Yonatan is aware of the fact that his father has these bouts of fit every time he sees David rise to a position of significance. So even a peaceful meeting between David and Yonatan in the public eye is bound to raise suspicion in Shaul's eyes. So even a peaceful encounter, he can't risk. Not at this point. And that's the message.
So how come he really can't tell him to come back?
Well, he can tell him to come back tomorrow, day after. He can tell him to run. But
this is taking place on Monday morning, right? The night after the dinner.
They haven't shot the arrows yet. He's just telling them the code. The expectation is that it would take place Monday evening, morning. The day after the feast. Correct. what ends up happening is there's 2 days Rosh Chodesh. And because there's 2 days Rosh Chodesh, it takes place on Tuesday, not Monday. Right? Why that's significant, we'll see in the second half of the story. But it's clearly that, turns out there's 2 days Rosh Chodesh, and neither in Yonatan's remarks nor in David's remarks are 2 days Rosh Chodesh mentioned. Which is why I believe it's a significant piece of the story.
Afternoon,
after the feast is done. The feast is in the middle of the day. Feast is lunchtime. So
Monday afternoon.
Late afternoon, towards evening. Maybe they had tracer arrows. You know. Alright. One of the mysteries that we have not resolved is why Yonatan suggests going out into the field.
At the beginning.
And that connects to my assumption that up until this point they've been inside, but not just inside a hiding house, but inside the palace, inside a public place. And I said I would prove that to you. So to do that, I want to go back to look at 2 phrases. Back to the first pasuk. Vayivrach David minayot b'ramah, vayavo vayomer lifnei Yonatan. David runs from Nayot Baramah, he comes and he speaks before Yonatan, he speaks to Yonatan. What's odd about that phrase? Vayomer lifnei Yonatan.
Speaks before him?
Right. What should it say?
To
Vayomer El. And if you look at the rest of the conversation, Vayomer David al Yonatan, Vayomer Yonatan al David, Vayomer David al Yonatan, Vayomer Yonatan al David, Vayomer Yonatan, right? There's a back and forth. Only once does it use the expression Vayomer Lifnei Yonatan. Mm-hmm. Now, you could say that that's sort of like pouring out his heart before somebody. He put his plea on the table. He shared his heart with him. He spoke and he said, Ma'asiti, ma'avani, ma'chatati. But the phrase Vayomer Lifnei is not an uncommon phrase. It is used in Tanakh. It does have a context, but it has a very specific context. So what I want to do very briefly is trace a couple of examples of where the phrase Vayomer Lifnei is used instead of Vayomer El. And you'll see the context right away. So let's take a quick glance at it. Just keep your finger on this place because we're going to come back here. But just a couple of quick observations. Let's start with Shmos Perek Vav. I'll just show you 4 examples. Shmos Perek Vav.
What pasuk?
Pasuk, that's a good question. What pasuk?
Perek starts with 68.
Pasuk Yud Bet.
Okay. So it's 68.
Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayidaber Moshe Lifnei Hashem. Lemor, Ein Bnei Yisrael Lashmu Elai Be'ech Yishmeini Paro V'ani Aval Svatayim. Moshe spoke before God. That's also unique, because in most places it says Vayomer El, or Vayidaber El. But here we have an instance where it says Vayidaber Moshe Lifnei Hashem. Another example. Malachim, now, is it Shmuel? Now Malachim. Malachim Aleph, Perek Gimel. Remember the story of Solomon and the 2 women who come to him with a child between them?
Yes.
Famous.
Yes.
Judgment of Solomon.
Malachim Aleph what?
Solomon the Brilliant.
What's the verse?
Malachim Aleph.
Malachim Aleph Perek Gimel. So take a look after the whole conversation starts in Pasuk Tet Zayin. The whole conversation starts in Perek Tet Zayin. Az Tavona Shtayim Nashim Zonot Al HaMelech.
Wait, what pasuk are you going
to tell? We'll get to the pasuk in a moment.
The 2 women.
Az tavona shtaim nashim nezonot al hamelach. All right. Take a look at pasuk chaf bet. Batomer aisha acheret. After they go back and forth.
4 or 6 on the bottom.
Let's say.
22.
Just look at Perek and Pasuk. You'll find it eventually. You'll navigate your way around Tanakh.
It might be too late.
Yatomre Isha Acheret. They each one's stating their case. The first one says, it's my son, the child is mine. The second one says, the child is mine. Yatomre Isha Acheret. Loki bini achai uvenecha met. Each one says, no, I have remember they had one child who was dead, one child who was alive. Mine is the alive child, yours is the dead child, yours is the dead child, mine is the alive. Back and forth. They spoke before the king. Now I'll show you one more example.
Are you showing us all these examples? Are these the only ones with this list?
No, I just pulled four that I could find very quickly.
But there are a bunch.
There are more. They're always in the same context, though. Take a look in Megillat Esther. All the way at the end. Megillat Esther. Perek Aleph, Pasuk Tet Zayin. Everybody have it?
886.
I'm going to put this on the sheet, it'll be faster. Vayomer Mimuchan lifnei ha-melech ve'asarim. Mimuchan spoke before the king and the officers. Et cetera, et cetera. What he says is not my issue. I don't really care right now. Vayomer Mimuchan lifnei ha-melech ve'asarim. I'll give you another example in the same sefer. Take a look at Perek Chet, Pasuk Gimel. Vatosef Esther.
Can't turn the page.
892.
Yeah,
page 92. Perek Chet, Pasuk Gimel. Vatosef Esther, Vatedaber Lifnei HaMelech. So I've given you four examples. Common denominator between all four.
King or God.
Authority. Correct. Mm-hmm. When you speak before, you're speaking before a king. You're speaking before the king of kings. You're speaking it's before malchus. A person of authority, a melech v'hasarim. It's malchus. It's mm-hmm. the equivalent of speaking in third person, as we would do today, right? Mm-hmm. The same reason you would call, when you refer to yourself, you're speaking right. to the king, you call yourself avdecha, the king's servant. Vayomer lifnei hamelech. Vatomer lifnei hamelech. When David comes to Yonatan, vayomer lifnei Yonatan, who is he speaking to?
The crown prince.
He's speaking to Yonatan, who's the crown prince.
His next in line.
He's speaking to the mm-hmm. son of the king, his best friend. But that's not the context of the conversation. In that opening passage, the context of the conversation is not about my best friend, you need to come with me. The context of the opening conversation is the king is trying to kill him and he's escaped with his life twice. So to some rhyme or reason, he comes before the son of the king. Plead my case, defend me, do something, protect me. The king wants to kill me. And the immediate response he expected was, let's go, pack my bags and let's get out of here. Or, I'll protect you, I guarantee you, well, let's do something. What he wasn't expecting was denial. Changes the whole tenor of the conversation. But he's talking to Yonatan in this capacity as the son of the king. There's a hierarchy in this conversation. There's David, who's the servant, who's the mm-hmm. armor bearer, who's the musician, talking to the crown prince. When you're in the palace, that's where you are. You're talking to the crown prince. You're in his office. You're in the palace. He's got a crown on his head. He's sitting on a throne. Vayomer lifnei Yonatan. And when it becomes clear to Yonatan that this is about the future of their relationship, Yonatan takes a remarkably bold step, but a necessary one. And he says to him, Havanitzelasadeh. Let's go outside.
Is he trying to remove himself from the position?
Because when he goes outside, what happens to the conversation?
He's a friend. He's not
right.
To change
his outside, he's not the crown prince. He left his crown on puts the crown on his throne, and they go outside hand in hand. Outside, he's his, what he always was. They're in a brit together. Then who's begging whom? In the palace, it's David begging Yonatan, spare his life, protect him. In the field, who's begging whom? It's Yonatan begging David. In the field, he can be open and engage with him as an equal, knowing full well what David is destined to be, knowing full well what David's promise is going to be, what his power is going to be, that he is not going to be, that Yonatan is not going to be the king, that David is going to be the king. He enters into a brit with David, asks David to spare his life, not the other way around. You can do that in the field. You can't do that in the palace. Mm-hmm. The location here is a reflection of the relationship between them and the shift from the bayit to the sadeh is a shift from the world of the malchus to the world of their friendship, from the world of the hierarchy in their relationship to the equality in their relationship. And that's what Yonatan tries to reflect. Now, in the end,
quality really wasn't good enough because he didn't say, "I'm going with you right
there." Right,
here.
Right. And that's the tragedy.
Then why does he ask him not to destroy him and his family at the end?
Right, because he's exactly the relationship. Right. He's decided to stay with Shaul.
But he still accepts the fact that David is going to be taken.
Oh, no question. He says it explicitly in the next parak. He knows full well. Understand the consequences. This is where it's an impossible decision. It puts Yonatan is one of the tragedies of Sefer Shmuel, because it puts Yonatan in an impossible scenario. He knows full well that the next king of Israel is going to be David. Even had everything stayed exactly as planned, everything's b'shalom, and David stays in the Malchus, and David is the son-in-law of the king, Yonatan knows full well that he's not going to be the king, and that David is, had everything gone according to plan, the language Yonatan uses is in Perech of Gimel, Vayomer elav al tira, ki lo timtza chayad Shaul avi, don't worry, my father Shaul will never find you. Atatim locha Yisrael, you will reign over Israel, v'anochi eyel lecha lemishne, and I'll be your second.
Is he asking or telling?
He's telling David that I know what you are going to, he's telling David that you're going to be the king. Right? And I will step aside. I will not stand in your way. Because who's the next in line to the throne? Yonatan. So Yonatan is telling David in Perakov Gimel, he says, I know full well that you're going to be the king. I'll step back. Had everything gone b'shalom, that's where the line would have gone. But it didn't. So in that moment when Yonatan decides to stay with Shaul, understand the consequences of that decision. Shaul is going to die in battle in Har Gilboa with all of his sons. This war is going to become a civil war between the tribes, a civil war in the nation of Israel. There's no stepping back from this decision. Yonatan has put his fate, has thrown in his lot with Shaul. And that's a choice. That's a choice. And it has consequences. So we're beginning to see this dynamic. These two individuals, these two people who were so close, who were like brothers, who were had a bridge between them, who over and over again, Vayosef Yonatan Nashbi et David, Vavatoto, Ki Avat Nafsho Evo. David comes to him as the crown prince, protect me, hide me, come with me. Yonatan says, my father wants to kill you. You need to run now. And that's where they part company.
So do you think that Yonatan did that because a father is his father? And
but that's a choice. Yeah. That's a choice he made. Okay. And it's a choice that's the same choice Michal made. Mm-hmm. It's the same choice Michal made.
Yeah, she made
this enable him to escape, but mm-hmm. stay with her father. And it's a tragedy for Michal. It's a tragedy for Shaul. For Yonatan. Mm-hmm. We can't live our lives in the what ifs and the and live our life backwards, so to speak, right? We can't live with what would have been. But in the end, that's what Tanakh was written for. Tanakh was written for us to learn from these critical moments and the mistakes that were made. We've often talked about the fact that Tanakh is not a happy-go-lucky book because it doesn't tell us all the times that things went right. Right? It tells us all the times that things went wrong. All these decisions are recorded because they're the wrong ones.
It almost never tells us what it's right.
And therein lies the tragedy. But that's the importance of learning from the story. The loyalty that Yonatan and David had, the understanding of the message of the Navi, the understanding of the role of David, how wrong Shaul was to try to turn on David. Shaul knows that Yonatan knows that Shaul is wrong. He says so twice. He says so in Perek Yotet when he tried to convince his father, and he says so in Perek Chav when he tries to convince his father again. He knows full well that David is innocent and that Shaul is committing a terrible crime, trying to kill an innocent man.
Are there halachas about that? That if Absolutely. You know if your father is doing something that's very wrong?
Absolutely there are halachas uh-huh. about it, on a much smaller scale even. Mm-hmm. Shaul decides to stay with his father, and that's the tragedy. But we've only looked at the first half of this conversation, which is the dynamic of the relationship between Shaul and between Yonatan and David, where we go from here is to part two of this parak, which is the implementation, what happened at the Feast of Rosh Chodesh, what happened to David in the field, and more importantly what happened with the arrows. Come back, Jana, to your question, right? And from there, begin to look at the end of the story of the fateful meeting between David and Yonatan. That's all on our agenda in our next class, which will be Bezat Hashem. To remind everybody, in 2 weeks' time.
Well, I'm going to remind you, though. You said you were going to.